introduce our main speaker for the evening, please give a warm welcome to Rick Z from San Diego.
You got one. Hi, everyone. I'm Rick. I'm an alcoholic. And I want to congratulate the birthday people and the token takers. Today, 90 days was a real big deal for me. It was a real turning point in my life, and congratulations. And take this opportunity to thank the group and thank Randy and Felix for giving me the opportunity to share with you tonight and giving me the opportunity to share it myself all day long today. What I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try to stay on track. I'm going to use the regular Alcoholics Anonymous format of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And, you know, it's a lot different today. But I was born. Well, something happened shortly after I was born. When I was three years old, my father passed away. And I was raised in a single-parent family when, you know, Leave It to Beaver was cool. And everywhere I looked, what I saw is I saw the little happy Leave It to Beaver family. And my family was single-parent. We lived in, you know, middle-class America. We did not lack for anything. My mom did a great job. But what I seen was that I was different, we were different, and why can't I be like you? And so early on, I started with some really good character building, some real good assets. I used self-pity. I used manipulation. I used jealousy. I was just full of it. I was flooded with it. I felt different. And, you know, I remember that from being, you know, from early on, before I ever took a drink of alcohol. I felt that way. And so when alcohol came around, I grew up in the, I started drinking alcohol in the late 60s. And the families in our neighborhood, some of the families in our neighborhood, the kids I hung around with, thought it was acceptable for 13, 14-year-old kids to drink beer. It was okay, you know. And boy, those became my good friends. Those were the houses I always wanted to spend the night at, you know. And so, you know, we would go camping, and, you know, we would get the Colt 45 malt liquor, you know, and a couple of Colt 45s. And next thing you know, we were doing the worm in the around the fire pit, you know. And it was exciting, you know. It was I really loved. I loved everything about liquor. I had a lot of good times with drinking. And so what happened with that is it just progressed. And, you know, it started being for like my one friend's dad had a keg tapper in his study. And so we would like say, okay, we're going to go to the nurse's office. And his parents worked and my mom worked. So nobody was really home to check on us if we made it home. So you're going to go to the nurse's office at whatever time, and I'm going to go to the nurse's office like 10 minutes after that. We're going home. And, you know, this is like 9 o'clock in the morning. And we'd get home, and we'd call our parents and tell them that we were, you know, we're home in bed, sick, and drinking. And we just, I mean, that's the kind of guys I grew up with. That's the kind of guys I hung out with. That was the nature of the people that I grew up with. And we just went on, and, you know, everything was about a party. And we just drank all the time, pretty much. We wanted to party all the time. I'm going to keep it clean, but really what we would say is we wanted to go get effed up, you know. I never wanted to just have a beer. I wanted to go to the other side. And drugs are really, I'm going to talk a little bit about drugs. It's my story. I can't change my story. I remember in eighth grade, this teacher shaking me. And I was on the desk like this. And the teacher couldn't wake me up. And then when she finally woke me up, she says, "You need to go to the nurse's office." And I knew you couldn't go to the nurse's office because I had ate like a rack of Reds, you know, and I could barely walk, let alone go to the nurse's office. I knew I had to get off campus. And so that's the way I like to be. I mean, that was the normal. And so we were motorcycle enthusiasts at one point during my later childhood. And we just loved to go, you know, now it's Barona's Casino. It used to be Barona Indian Reservation. They used to have a nice motorcycle place out there. We used to go driving all through the canyons out there, and there's a place called Devil's Punch Bowl, and we would just go out there and just party. And it was wonderful. And somewhere along the line, I had this high school sweetheart, and she ended up getting pregnant, and we started a family. I ended up this irresponsible person full of this stuff like jealousy and self-pity, and I had no real good character. I had no real good, I didn't have any good role models. Decided to get married at 17 years old. And had three kids by the time I was 21. And, you know, being a good Catholic kid. I remember coming home and telling my mom that we were getting married. And I was raised Catholic, and my mom sat me down and she says, "Just because you got that girl pregnant doesn't mean you have to marry her." And that's not what the Catholics teach you, you know. And so, you know, I proposed to her the way a lot of people in my neighborhood proposed. "You're what?" still trying to figure out how that happened. But you know, at those high school keg parties, I always seemed to be the one with the tapper in my hand, you know, divvying out the beer, and mine was always full, you know, and I didn't think that was a problem, you know. And then what happened was problems started, and I was pretty much all the time stressed out with all the responsibilities. And so the easier, softer way for me was to find things before they were officially lost. And preferably they had dead presidents on them and they were like green paper. And I did that stuff I did whatever it took to do that. And society doesn't really like people that do that. And they started punishing me for it. How dare them? Problem was most of the time I didn't even remember I did it. You know, because I was a blackout drinker. And I needed that liquid courage to go commit those things. And it's not anything I'm proud of, but that's my story. And, you know, it was just completely insanity. At first, I actually got some really good breaks, you know. 18 years old, I had to go do some honor camp time. And this was for a horrendous felony. I got a big break. judge gave me a big break, told me he gave me a big break, told me if I had ever come back in front of him, he wasn't going to give me that same break. And that was the first time I went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I was 18 years old. And this guy that was up in the honor camp invited me. He said they were going to have donuts and coffee. And I went and I listened to your stories. Now, granted, I was in jail. I was there for something really serious, really bad. And I couldn't believe your stories. You guys were really sick. You know. And I sat there and I said, you know what? If I ever get that bad, you know, I might try this place out. And I was 18 years old. I was never sentenced to Alcoholics Anonymous until I was later on. I didn't have to go back and really do a lot of horrendous crimes, but I did end up in front of that judge again. And remember I told you what that judge said he was going to do? Well, he wasn't lying. And so at 20 years old, we called it the Grey Goose North. I got into a California Department of Corrections bus and was shipped up to Tracy, California. They called it Gladiator School at the time because that's where they sent the young kids that were violent. And I was only violent when I was drunk, so I was scared shitless. And when I got to Tracy, I was chained together with about 20 other knuckleheads. We were shackled and we were chained together onto this big chain. And we were taken down this big long corridor. And there was a riot going on. And there was tear gas all through this corridor. And you couldn't get your hands up to your face to wipe the tears out of your eyes. You just had to trust that you were going down the corridor. And I remember that day, I remember thinking, how did a good Catholic kid like you end up here? What in the hell happened? And I could never put together what was liquor. It was this had happened, that had happened. I always had an excuse. Bad luck picking on me. They quit picking on me. I'd just be okay. No one was picking on me. I never got found guilty for anything I didn't do. I got out of that place, thank God, got transferred over after going through a deal there. I convinced them that I wasn't one of these gladiators and I needed to get the hell out of here so I could go support those kids. They agreed with me, transferred me over to a middle security place. And I ended up doing my time and getting the hell out of there, never to return. That's really uncommon in California. But I didn't quit drinking. But I did quit being such a knucklehead that got me that that sentence. And what happened is I went on and I was just completely, I was never happy with where I was at. And so, and I like to drink in bars. And when I got out of there, I got a pretty decent career. I was working on the waterfront. I was a welder. I progressed up and got a bunch of certifications and was doing all this cool stuff for the Navy. And drinking and using the whole time. And being unhappy wherever I was at and being a bar drinker meant that you had to drive in between one bar to get to the other bar. And so they started finding me drunk behind the wheel. And that's when I started being introduced to maybe I had a problem with drinking. But you still couldn't convince me I had a problem with drinking. Drinking was always my solution. I love the effect of alcohol. I love the effect. The book talks about it. I love the effect produced by alcohol. It took away everything. I was taller, smarter, bigger, you know, everything when I was drinking. And And so all those things that I was not happy with were taken away. Remember I told you about these three kids and I had this wife, and they hung in there through that whole time. They hung in there through all that prison shit. And, my mom would bring them up to visit me. Thank God that woman, I put her through hell. I'll talk about her a little later. We get to give back if we stay around here. I didn't abuse my kids. I definitely abused my wife. And working in those shipyards, I used to get off at 3:30 in the afternoon, and my wife worked until 7 o'clock. And so she went in later, and my kids, when they were younger, went over to my mother-in-law's house. When they were older, they were in elementary school, and she would pick them up from elementary school. But it was my job to leave at 3:30 from work and go pick them up over at my mother-in-law's house. Well, I don't know, well, I do today, why I could never stop at the bar like the other guys, have a 50-cent pitcher of beer, shoot a game of pool, and leave that bar and go pick those kids up. I loved them. But, you know, the book talks about it. I got that mental obsession, and I got a physical allergy. I never understood it. As soon as I took that first sip off that first beer, all bets were off. Those responsibilities were no longer mine. I was going to stay there and do whatever I needed to do till I was done. And, I did it hundreds of times. Hundreds of times my head told me it was going to be different this time. That I was going to be able to go into that bar, have a 50-cent pitcher of beer, shoot a game of pool with these guys, go get those kids, be home when my wife came home from work. Hundreds of times it never happened. You would think hundreds of times you would get a clue. Didn't even have a clue. What happened is things got really bad. Things really progressed, got really bad. I was about 28 years old. And I came home around Thanksgiving one year, and my wife and my kids were gone. People say they lost their families here. Mine escaped. Mine escaped. They had been gone before, but they'd always went over to mother-in-law's house. A couple days later, I'd convince them to come back home that things were going to be different. Things were never different. So it went on and on and on like that. But they were gone. And I went on a serious bender. That was 1983. And I couldn't find them. They were gone. We lived over by College Grove. They had moved to Oceanside. I never went up to Oceanside. I didn't like Oceanside. But they were gone. I went through that Thanksgiving holiday. I went through the Christmas holidays. Just a basket case, worse than I had ever been. I was so drunk and so loaded all the time that I would see visions of them walking in the house, that they were home, and then realize that they weren't home. I got so bad that New Year's Eve, I had run everybody out of my life. There was no friends no more. Family really, except for mom, would still talk to me. That New Year's Eve, I was sitting in on my front porch. I had taken Chevy engine orange paint, and I had written on my big picture window on the front of my house, "Fuck off and die." I put a light behind the window so it glowed like a neon sign. I sat on my front porch in the rocking chair that I rocked my children in, with a 28-inch long Louisville bat, and I drank bottles of Boone's Farm apple wine, one after another. And when I finished the bottle, I threw it at the next vehicle that drove by. That wasn't my bottom. Later on that evening, periodically I would go into the backyard and shoot off a few shotgun shells just to let the neighbors know that I was still home. That wasn't my bottom. I had these really nice neighbors next door, and I had a chance to make amends to them, too, since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. But what happened is, I don't know what time of night it was, but I was passed out face down in the front grass of my house, and I had no identification on me. Like the police needed identification for me. They came and found me laying face down in the front grass. My neighbors had called them. Thought I'd took the big bullet. And I was just passed out. But that was one of the best days of my life, actually. Because what happened was the police came. They got me. They ransacked my house. Took all my guns. Took all my paraphernalia. There was no drugs in town at the time, so that was why I was drinking so bad. And took all the drug paraphernalia, scales, and everything, and took me, of course. And so I woke up New Year's Day, county jail, one more time, going, how did a good Catholic kid like you end up here? And what happened was, sometimes you get lucky. Just sometimes you get lucky. Illegal search and seizure because they couldn't prove that I was the person that lived in the house. Because I had no identification on me. It probably didn't hurt that my middle daughter, who's now 32, her godfather was a district attorney. So that might have had something to do with it. But from then, it actually spun even more out of control when I got out, and I ended up finally getting out of that house. And one of the things that happened after that, because see, I know that at New Year's I still had electricity because I had that lamp lit behind that orange spray paint that made it look like a neon sign. And when it really got bad was, I quit paying San Diego Gas and Electric because I couldn't afford to pay those guys anymore. And so I would pull my truck into the garage, I would lift the lid, and I had a 12-volt wire running through the house with a couple brake lights on it. And one led back to the closet where I did drugs and drank gin. That wasn't my bottom. You would have thought that would have been your bottom. Then that was early 1984. What happened was contact was made again with those children and that wife, and that property was divided. And we tried to do the best we could on our own. I was still just madly drinking. Just psycho when I was drinking. And one of my last drunks was after an early Little League game. It was about 10 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. Beautiful Saturday. Beautiful sunny Saturday. I said, let's go to the beach. I'm just by myself. Nobody will hang out with me no more. So I go to Ocean Beach, and I know I drank a little bit because when I found my car again, there was two empty pints of 100-proof peppermint schnapps, and there was a full one between the seats. And where I had woken up was it face down in the sand. It was dark time, and I started at 10 o'clock in the morning. Sun was down, and I had shit myself. That wasn't my bottom. Thank God for the Pacific Ocean. Oh, like I told you, I found my car. There's two empty pints, full pint. Whoever sold me that third pint? You got to remember, it's Ocean Beach. Oh. Anyhow, shortly after that, I got the drunk driving that sent me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think it might have been Chuck Courtney that explained to me what I was going to go through when I was sentenced to SB 38. I had been sentenced to SB 38 before, but I failed to complete it, and they failed to do anything about it. And this time they said they weren't going to be doing that. And so I was given some jail time. I was given some work furlough time, which I really needed because it gave me a break, and I was able to just concentrate on going to work and stacking some money aside. At that time, I was living in the family room at my mom's house before I went to work furlough. When I got out of work furlough, had a little money put away, I was able to go off on my own again. And I had to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to this SB 38 first, and they made me sign a sheet of paper that said I wasn't going to drink for the next 12 months, and they had some dates on there and stuff, and I said, you know, I had no integrity. I could sign anything. I had no honesty with self or with you. What happened was I went to the SB 38 program, and the one in El Cajon, East County Accord, and I started up with that program. And I waited until the very last day I had to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I came home from work. I was living in a real nice place in La Mesa, nice garden apartment, all the pool and jacuzzis and all that stuff. And so I said, came home and I said, I'm going to go take a little spa treatment before I go to Alcoholics Anonymous. Go take a little relaxation. And so I go, and I'm sitting in the spa, and there's nobody in the spa. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm going to go somewhere at 6 or 7 o'clock that night. And so here comes some 19-year-old kid. Comes, sits in the spa with me. And I don't know why I told him, but I said, you know what? I got to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous tonight. And he jumps up in the spa, and he goes, I'll go with you. I know where they're at. First coincidence. I didn't know if I wanted to go with him, to be honest with you. I was not happy to be going to Alcoholics Anonymous. He seemed to be happy. And so Ray took me to Lemon Grove Alano Club. You know, one of our members calls it poster child for county mental health. And, you know, I do remember going. I don't really remember what happened at my first meeting. But I knew there was a bunch of knuckleheads there, quite like me. I did not have my ears turned on. I wasn't hearing anything. I was just there to get my court card signed. And, you know, it seemed like an okay place to go back to, so I went there once a week to get my court card signed. But see, you know, when I signed that sheet of paper that said I was going to quit drinking for a year, I didn't quit drinking. And so the reason why they make you quit drinking for a year, my understanding of this is that an alcoholic can't do anything for a year. that they're still drinking consistently. And so what happened is I showed up at one of my one-on-one sessions, and I didn't think they would have smelled the beer that I had at lunchtime. But they had smelled that beer that I had at lunchtime and said, "You've been drinking, and we're going to kick you out of this class, and you have to go back and talk to the judge again." And so at that time, I had 3 pending DUIs, or I was on probation for 3 pending DUIs, which is maximum of a year on each one of them at that time. I don't know what it is anymore. But I went back in front of that judge, and he said, "You better go beg that program to get back in there, because if you can't get back in there, I'm going to give you the law prescribes on each one of those pending DUIs that you have." And I went, "Oh, shit, I better go back there." You know, I wasn't bending over. I was kneeling down. And you know what they told me at East County Accord in El Cajon? "Loser, hey loser, get out of here. We don't need your kind of people around here. We want people that are committed to this program or looking to change their lives." There's another one up in Kearny Mesa. You might go up there and see if they might take you in. But we're not taking you in. You see, that's where I did the first one, on the second one, and now I was on the third one doing the same thing to those people, and they were just done with me. And so I went up to another coincidence. Somebody had finally told me the truth. You know what I'm saying? I'd been pacified all these times. "Oh, poor little Ricky. His daddy died when he was 3, and all this self-pity that I could, you know, manipulate my way through life through, and all this stuff was still, you know, I used it all the time. I mean, I think back and I can remember." And so I went up to that place up in Kearny Mesa, and I met this guy. And he was much like that person that told me off at East County Accord. I think they had talked. Because he says, "You know what? I don't even know why I'm talking to a loser like you, let alone considering letting you in our program." He goes, "You have no integrity. You're not honest. You're going to say whatever you need to say to get in here. You're not going to stop drinking and using. You've always been a loser. You're not responsible for anything. You're not taking care of your kids." All this stuff was all true, what he was saying. And I'm sitting there saying, "How dare this son of a bitch talk to me like that?" You know? But at that point, 3 years, talk to me like that, I was willing. I was willing to at least listen to that. And so he said, "There's only one way I'll let you in this program." And he said that if you're willing to go to 90 Alcoholics Anonymous meetings in the next 120 days, and I want to let you know, I'm like the president of Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you don't go to those meetings, I'm going to find out that you're not getting those meeting cards signed by a real secretary, and you're going to go visit that judge again."
Oh, yeah.
And I went, "Damn, I didn't know you guys didn't have presidents and shit like that." So I said, "Yeah, I'll agree to that." And somewhere during that time, I had moved from La Mesa down to Pacific Beach. And I had like a lot of little visions that had happened. I got real sick at one time down in the shipyards. I went to the doctor. The doctor said, "If you don't take some time off of work," he goes, "I'm not going to guarantee how long you're going to live." Live? What the hell are you talking about? "And if you don't stop doing that shit that you're doing," which was, I loved crystal methamphetamine too. And gin. "I'm not going to guarantee how long you're going to live." And so I went to work and told them that I needed to take this week off. I had this doctor's excuse, and they said, "We're on accelerated time. You can't do that. You'll come back to no job." And something inside of me said, "You need to take a break and go try this Alcoholics Anonymous thing." And I had never given myself a break, you know. If I gave myself a break, I was like locked up somewhere or something, you know. Not a break out in the streets. And so I went and I did that commitment. I did that commitment with that guy, Elton. But he didn't say anything about not doing any drugs or smoking any weed. he just talked about drinking. And so when I had my one-on-one session with him, he actually finished up something. He says, you get 30 days in Alcoholics Anonymous, you bring me one of those little round coins. He goes, I'll take you out to dinner. Wow, okay. And so I went to my one-on-one session, and I flipped my little 30-day chip up on his desk, and he took me to McDonald's. But the guy, you know, he basically saved my life because he really was a better manipulator than I was. And I was really going to those Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And, you know, what I was hearing at those Alcoholics Anonymous meetings was what was important. And they were talking about, you know, going to meetings and not drinking in between meetings. And I started doing that most of the time. And even though I was only doing it most of the time, my life had changed. You know, and I was still smoking a little funny weed, and I whiffed a couple lines in between there. You know, I'm still impressed about this. The last time I drank was March 4th, 1986. The last time I did any chemical drugs was April 28th. That, I got goosebumps by thinking about that. So I have a true, honest, clean and sober birthday of June 3rd of 86. And what happened, somewhere in between that time, I was only in Pacific Beach for about a month, but a couple weeks into that, I was really miserable still because I wasn't honest. You see how many times honest is mentioned in How It Works? This is how the program of Alcoholics Anonymous works. Okay, it's not being honest with your lip service. It's being honest so you can live comfortable with yourself. And I was still just miserable because I was not honest. And so I dropped down on my knees and I said, if there's a power out there like they talk about in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I need your help because I can't go on living like this any longer. The next meeting I went to, I asked for help. What I heard from that gentleman was, he says, I don't know how much help I'm going to be able to be to you other than share the program of Alcoholics Anonymous the way it's outlined in that blue book over there. You got one of these? And I said, yeah, I got one of those. He goes, have you read it? No. I'm not a big reader. He said, well, if I'm going to help you, we're going to read that book. I started reading that book, and they started talking about me. They started talking about why I drank. I drank basically because I loved the effect that alcohol produced. They started talking about a solution in there. They started talking about the reason why that book was written. To help you find a power greater than yourself to solve your problem. Now, at that time, my problem was still drugs and alcohol. What I come to find out later on, that I was the problem. You know, and then, you know, the good news was that only one thing had to be changed. Everything. And so, you know, we got to work, and 1986 in Pacific Beach was a great place to get sober. You know, I just had a host of friends, just hundreds of friends. And what happened is I got my life back. I didn't get my wife back. Thank you. I got a new wife. Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous will give you everything. But you know, I got my life back, and I was working again. I was seeing those kids, and I was bringing them down to the beach, and we were having fun. And life was good. I was doing those steps. I was cleaning the house. I was making those amends. I was feeling really good about myself.
And what happened is the rug basically, or the deck basically, got pulled out from underneath me on a ship. I fell 30 feet and broke my back. And you got to watch what you pray for too, because I had a helper, and the helper was he was a twin of me before Alcoholics Anonymous. He would help me set up my gear in the morning, and then I'd lose him for about 2 hours as he went and found his cot. And then he'd come back, and he'd go, "I'm going to work." And and so I'd be having to, like, really burn some rod to catch up for this knucklehead running around for a couple hours copping on a ship. And so I would be, once you get really good, I could see myself in my welding goggles, and I'd be praying while I was under the hood. And I'm saying, "God, I got to get the hell out of here. I know I got to be self-supporting through my own contributions. I know I got to support this family. I've been taught this stuff to be responsible in Alcoholics Anonymous. Finally, I had some kind of a direction. I had some kind of role models that were helping me with my life, teaching me what was right thing to do. And I was making all kinds of deals with God. I was saying, "I'll accept less money. I'll accept that fear of walking out there into the unknown. Just open a new door for me." And, well, he opened up a hole in the damn deck. And so, one more time, when I was strapped to that stretcher and I was broken back on the way to the hospital, I was going, "I didn't mean like this," and what happened is a lot of things happened during that time. I had a 2-year rehabilitation. That career ended. More doors opened up. A lot of more doors opened up. During that time, I was 90 days sober. Joanne was 3 days sober. We met, and we were part of a home group for 10 years before we got married. And there's a whole story around that, but they're telling me I gotta get wrap this thing up. This time I stayed drunk too long, but that was fun. I did this deal. If you have a hard time, or if you're forgetting about the way it was and what happened and the way it is today, just ask somebody to sign you up for a speaker engagement. And you'll rerun that stuff about 50 times in your head before you get here, and then you'll be able to share it one more time with you guys. But what's happened is I've been through the steps numerous times. I'm not well. You're not laughing. I still have a ways to go. God's not done with me. I got a different God than I got here with. I got a loving God now. I just call him Big Dad. When I got something scary to go through, I say, "Okay, Big Dad, let's go." And he's with me. It's kind of like he's like my gang member, Good gang, though. We're not doing any destruction. We're not like going out and taking those dead presidents away from people today. We're out there doing God's will. And I have a real beautiful life, And God, I wanted to say so much more, but they're not going to let me. Thanks, you guys.